Today I want to talk about family recipes, but first I want to mention the passing of someone dear to Xinqiu.
Recording in progress.
Okay, here we go. Got it. But first I want to mention the passing of someone dear to Xinqiu and I, and to anyone who enters the Sendo. Jim Abrams was an old Dharma friend of ours. We were at Tassajara together. And when we started Ocean Gate, we started with an IKEA TV stand as an altar. And the Buddha out there, and we had this bell, I think, and anyway, not a whole lot. And a little, much smaller space in the front of the building. And Jim and Catherine were living in the area then, and Jim said, "You guys need an altar." So he found a place. There's a place in Castroville or someplace down there that recovered wood, that especially the redwood trees that were felled and left. There were so many redwood trees that were felled and just left because they were to sit. And now they're pulling them up out of the creeks and various things. So they're old growth redwood, but were not cut down for anything. And he made this beautiful altar for us. And would take nothing for it. So Jim died last night. Xinqiu and I were up there yesterday and spent the day with Catherine and Jim. And we've known both of them for many years, so he was a quiet man, a humble man, with many talents, some of which we just learned about yesterday. He made handmade musical instruments, and we saw one of the mandolins he'd made, which was just astoundingly beautiful. So he made these beautiful, beautiful musical instruments you could see, and he also made musical instruments out of found objects. Mm-hmm. So one of the other mandolins that we saw was made out of a banker's box, mm-hmm. and the upper part of the neck of the mandolin was made out of formica. And anyway, he also played instruments, and he was also adopted into the Gourd clan of the Kiowa Sioux Indian Nation, which is a clan of military veterans. So he was in drumming circles, and I mean, just all-round, kind, quiet, beautiful man. And he made beauty and richness in everything he did. And I was thinking how much we need that now. How much we need that now. You know, how do we beauty and richness in our lives and enhance the lives of others? So this is we're gonna leave this up on the altar. This is a picture taken at Tassajara. Xinqiu and I were down there in the summer teaching, and Jim happened to be there at the same time, and he didn't like to wear his robes very much. We convinced him when we said thank you to him for the altar, we said, "You have to come and wear your robes." but anyway, he was functioning as Doshi, you know, and so Xinqiu said, "I want to be your Jisha." Aww. And he was walking back, and she said, Jim, we have to bow together." So this is a picture of Xinqiu and Jim bowing together on the bridge at Tassajara. So anyway, a truly wonderful man. And there's a card out there that Sue knew them, both of them, very well, too. And Sue arranged for a card out there, so please sign it, and we'll send it to Catherine. So last week, Shinju spoke about Dogen's fascicle Gyoji, and sometimes this is translated as continuous practice or sustained practice, and I've been thinking about this this last week, about what sustains us. In particular, what sustains our life of practice and what we do to sustain our lives and what we give to the world that sustains it. And I think one of the reasons that I've been thinking about this so much, not because it's like deeply relevant right now, you think, but also because my second Dharma name is Doyo, which means sustains the way or is sustained by the way. It's not the same characters, but that's the way it was translated for me. So to sustain means to hold up, especially kind of infrastructure, like to support, and also to endure over time. So it's to attend to care for that which nourishes and supports. It's concrete. You know, and it's caring directly, kind of like Jim did, for life. What supports, what nourishes, what feeds. So this got me thinking about how we are sustained by the food that we eat. And it becomes a part of our body, right? The food we eat is both integral to the larger body of the world, and it's something that each of us as individual people take in order to live and thrive. So the food we eat takes a different form as it enters our body, our bones, our flesh, our minds, our hearts. And there's also kind of no difference between the food in our bodies and the world. And yet each of us has our own individual being. Dogen Senji, the founder of our school, wrote much on cooking as an essential practice and the role of the tenzo, or the head cook of a monastery. This head cook is considered a Dharma elder, an elder in the way. The tenzo nourishes the practice of the monks, sustains them, not just with good food, but by being an exemplar of the practice itself. And it's important in Soto Zen, we don't eat to practice. Practice isn't something else we do. Just as we don't work in order so that we can stop and sit in meditation. The work, the cooking, the meditation, everything we do is part of our practice. Part of our practice is our practice. So each activity has its own way, its own practice, its own gift to make to the whole. So I was thinking about this the other day, and I thought, practice is like, the forms of practice, the way of practice is like a family recipe that's been handed down through generations. Something that was developed from what was available, often the poorest ingredients, to create and nourish us. It's something that we cherish and respect. We receive it, and we try to do it as well as our grandmothers and grandfathers, grandparents did it and brought it to life. So we read the recipe carefully, knowing each step was worked out to support the emergence of a particular dish. It's actually kind of amazing. You know, just think about how many cooks it took to create some things. Like, who figured out yeast? How long did it take to figure out that acorn flour needs to be soaked in order to remove the tannins so it's safe to eat? This is the people of this land, the original people of this land, unceded land, are the people that figured this out. You know, how long did that take? How did different cheeses develop? Like, did milk just sit out and then somebody figured out that, you know, we think about it, we get all these things, but generations and generations and generations of people figured this out. So when we think about this, then gratitude opens up, right, to what we've received. I mentioned this before, but this was a really important experience to me. When I was a teenager, my best friend's grandmother, who was Portuguese, taught us how to make Portuguese sweetbread. So the first step was to put a scarf on your head. Next is to wash your hands. Then to set out the bowls and gather the ingredients. Only then did you begin to cook. Putting a scarf on your head was as important as mixing the flour and the milk. There was nothing slapdash about this process. But it was also not precious or special. I remember her hands simply and carefully putting the ingredients together, kneading the bread, setting it aside. No gesture was wasted. Nothing but ordinary effort. I wonder how many times had she done the same thing? How many loaves had she made to feed her family? And yet there was nothing bored or inconsequential about her activities. Full respect was given to each aspect of the process. She explained to us how to do things, but mostly she just showed us by her doing. I remember thinking it would take me a long, long time and many loaves to come close to what she was doing and the way she was doing it. So this is our practice. We bake the same loaves over and over and over and over and over. As we do this, as we care for each aspect, we give to it its own life by respecting it. Right? When we regard the aspects of our practice as the ingredients and the steps, the elements of a family recipe, we have a certain attitude towards it. When we come to the zendo, we take off our shoes. We enter the zendo, we do a brief bow. As we step in, we bow to and from our cushions. We sit down with care. We attend to our bodies and minds. We get up. We fluff our cushion. We bow to it and to the room. We stand together. Sometimes we bow. Sometimes we chant. We exit with care. We greet each other, guided by respect and kindness for each person. We come together in whatever way we can, in person if we can, or on Zoom if we are far away. Our presence with each other is a part of the ingredients to this family recipe. We also listen to the Dharma together. We join together to sing sometimes, right? To sew, to clean, to walk. Our lives intertwine and form a base of support. And we do this, we have this attitude towards all of the aspects of our lives, not just with this Sangha, but with our families, with our work, with when we're driving down the street. All of this, all of these are ingredients. So over how many generations have people discovered, oh, this helps. This ingredient makes for a rich and nourishing food for our spiritual practice. Oh, stopping to bow, stopping to pay attention to this cushion, this lovely cushion that I'm going to sit on. Greeting each other, These are rich and nourishing food for our spiritual practice, for our being. If we are inspired by the Soto Zen way and we want to cook our lives according to that way, we are curious about all the elements that go into it. We are open and engaged. This is this family recipe. There's many of them. Venerable, delicious, wonderful family recipes out there. There's no one right way to do this. But if we want to cook this dish, if we're drawn this way, we say, I wonder how we received this. Who thought of this? There's a certain intelligence to it, right? Who thought of lowering our head? That happens in many, many, many traditions. This is human. This is not about right or wrong. How many times have I said this? Our forms, what we do, how we do it, not about right or wrong or good or bad. It's practical. If you want to cook Portuguese sweetbread, if you want to cook a Zen life, do this. Try this. We can take the time to examine each of the steps. Often, the logic of something we can never know, and we can only discover by doing. Or we can simply follow our grandmother's hands and do the best we can to do as she has done and the generations before her have done. Often, even if we follow as closely as we can, we fail. The bread goes flat, the bell clangs instead of sounds, the incense is crooked, we step on our neighbor's foot in the zendo, we're way off key and out of sync when we chant. Over time, we learn. Oh, this is important. I didn't notice this before. Or we learn the why of certain things and how that order matters. Put the milk in at this stage, not earlier, not later. Hold the incense this way. Sit with support under my knees this way. It's ongoing. We never tire of it. We continue learning even when we become good at it. Learning never stops. We are engaged in creating something every day different and yet the same. And at the same time, changes inevitably happen. So as a recipe moves to a new place, a new culture, a new environment, things change. We don't need to try and make things change or try and figure out how we think things should change. We simply do things. We throw ourselves in. We do our best to follow the recipe. And we bring our whole selves to the process. We weave together the elements in this world at this time. Maybe we put on a knit beanie instead of a scarf. We find the flour in this place is different. The sweetener changes. I was thinking about sourdough starter, you know. When a portion of sourdough starter is moved to a new location, it takes on the character of that new place and time. So we carefully carry it to a new home. We make sure it stays alive and healthy. And we feed it and sustain it. As we do that, it will draw from the local water and air and flour a unique expression. It's still sourdough starter. It's still what it was all along, but it is also unique and different. This happens in each community and in each person. And we see this and we appreciate this uniqueness. Again, not right or wrong. as we take up the practice of this recipe, we bring to it the ingredients of our own hearts and minds. And naturally, something comes forth that's new. And in this way, we contribute that uniqueness to the community, to the world. We are alive to it. Probably my friend's grandmother's Portuguese sweetbread was a little different than her neighbor's. Right? And maybe after we've gotten the hang of the recipe, we want to experiment a bit. We try something different. We do not do this because we think the old is somehow irrelevant or outdated or it needs to be shed. We do it because we cherish what has been given to us. We respect our grandmother and grandfather and grandparent. And we want to carry forward what they've given us. We have cared for each step. We have come to have a deep sense of how it is a living part of the whole and what it can teach us about nourishment, cooking, being alive. And then we play a bit. We bring our own lives into it. We do this with care and attention and respect and humility. But we also do. In the Denko Roku, the record of transmitting the light, the stories of the Zen ancestor by Zen Master Keizan, he told us that when we come to know our way, when we live this practice, when we realize it by doing it, the first Zen ancestor, Mahakasyapa, will wiggle his toes in our sandals. It means no difference. No difference. Even if my Portuguese sweetbread, which I haven't even attempted to cook in many, many years, was a flop. In my effort to cook it, I was still enacting all that I had been given by my friend's grandmother all those years ago. And say maybe it was spectacular, but it has a slightly different flavor. I would still be enacting what I was given by my friend's Portuguese grandmother all those years ago. Because I was honoring, respecting, and moving with the tradition, and it would be different. As you knead the bread, your hands are the hands of your grandmother, the hands of all those who have come before, generation after generation. It does not matter if you do it poorly or well. It does not matter if you are a novice bread maker or an expert baker. It is in the doing that the life of the family recipe is carried out. As you do it, the bread takes shape, comes into being, feeds us, and the doing is also the feeding. The enactment is the recipe. And so our engagement with what we have received brings the family recipe to life. We need to study this each day in our activities. When we come to the Zendo, we take care in a lighthearted way of the forms, of the ways that we engage with each other, of our meditation practice, because our joy and our life spirit should not be stifled by what is right, what we think it should be, or what we think is right and wrong. You know what I'm saying? We just come and do. We pay attention, of course, and we make our best effort to do the forms and practice wholeheartedly. But we do it with the same care and ease and generosity that we have received them. We know that it is the attention and the care that we bring, particularly in the company of others, that it is in that that we discover what is most real about this recipe and what it guides us to discover. We come to know how we are sustained, how we help sustain others, how we sustain the family recipe, how it changes. We see our hands as our grandmother's hands, and we feel Mahakasyapa wiggling his toes in our sandals. Thank you.